Welcome to another episode of Living an Altar Life. This is Mike, and this is finally the Across the Years recap, where we're going in 2025, all kinds of good stuff, and man, I'm excited, but 2024 was an incredible year. I'm quite happy with where I went in 2024 and where we're going as a podcast. 2024 was a phenomenal year. We had 38 total guests in 2024, and I don't know if we can top that in 2025, but man, it was a phenomenal year. The caliber of the runners that we had on this podcast just blows my ever-living mind, and so I'm just excited about it. I thank all of you listeners for hanging in there with us for 4 years and continuing to hang in there with us. We're going someplace. I'm not quite sure where, but we keep on growing. The numbers keep on going up. I don't get it, but the podcast is this little niche podcast that people seem to groove on, and it's very exciting. So let's jump right into Across the Years 2024-2025. I had never ran in Arizona beyond, I think I'd done trail runs when I was down there when I was a national sales manager, and I would go to Phoenix on sales calls and everything. And so I've been there, I've run there. I couldn't tell you what my longest distance before Across the Years had been. But I was very interested in Across the Years because I kept on reading everything about Aravaipa and Jamil Curry and his incredible team that I just think they're second to none in the ultra running sport. They have their act together and they just keep on doing good. And so I've been reading about it. Then when I was at 6 Days in the Dome, a couple of the guys there were talking about Across the Years and what a phenomenal, you know, race it was and how much fun it was. And so I just decided, probably summertime when I felt like I had recovered a little bit from 6 Days in the Dome, I was like, all right, I'm signing up and I'm going to go for 72 hours. Then I find out Billy Gunn from North Carolina was going to be there. He ended up being the second overall finisher with, I think, 231 miles or something like that. He blew my mind. The dude is just an amazing, amazing runner. And Billy's been on the program, and so you guys recognize him. But just an incredible runner. It was so much fun. And so I got out to 72 hours on December the 30th and arrived, got my rental car, which proved to be the first little thing that I had to adapt and overcome. And then headed out to the site, kind of checking it out, scoping it out, going, okay, how's this going to work with my little compact rental car now instead of an SUV like I had rented. But just kind of checking things out, looking at where the sleep center was, the warming tent, all those kind of different options that they had for sleep options, and trying to figure out how that was going to work. And then I took off, and I had read a lot about the trails at McDowell Mountain. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to find this McDowell Mountain. And it was only like a 20-minute drive from where the race was. And so I went and did a kind of trail hike run. It was a blast. I mean, it was just cacti everywhere and just this red, red dirt and just, you know, big climbs and big descents. And I just loved it. You'll be proud of me. I actually said, Mike, you can't go forever because you got to start running tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And so I cut it off short, only did like 5-6 miles, which was, you know, pretty short for me. And I went to my Airbnb and got all my stuff situated, figured out how I was going to repack the car so that I could aid station out of the car. And I had found the perfect parking place, which was, you know, less than 50 yards off the course. And yeah, everything was working out fine. Got to the site about 7:30 of race morning, which is December 31st, New Year's Eve, and was just ready to roll. You know, took care of all my pre-race business. I decided to wear a pack where I had one bottle of my electrolyte. I kept a liter and a half bladder of water, and then I had another soft bottle with my scratch fuel, and I was good to go. I, you know, a peanut butter pack, some pistachios like is norm, lined up at the start line, realize that, oh my gosh, there's some tremendous athletes in here. Then I finally realized that there were marathon runners who were starting a marathon. There were 24 hours. There were a couple hundred milers who were starting. There were a couple 200 milers that were starting. There were some 6 hours. There were some 12 hours. There were a couple 48 hours. And I was like, holy smokes, this is more than I thought. And I took off and I maintained a pretty good steady pace for probably the first 4 or 5 hours. Sometime in the afternoon around 2 o'clock, it got hot. And it wasn't like it was hot because the temperature, you know, I pulled my phone out and I was like, okay, it's only 75. But then I realized the challenge was that the sun was just, it's much closer. And they have blue skies in Arizona that there's no clouds anywhere around. You know, and if you're used to running in Virginia, you know, you're used to, we have blue sky days, but not like an Arizona blue sky day, not like a Western mountain desert community blue sky day. And there was no cover anywhere on this 1.4 mile loop, except for the start finish line where you kind of went through the main concourse of the Seattle Mariners spring training facility. And it was the main concourse, and that was the only part that was covered, and that was your shade. And I slowed way down in the afternoon. So that first day, I think I finally hit my first 50K. We started at 9 a.m., and I want to say I hit my first 50K right about 4:30. So it was probably, I want to say it was 7.5 hours for the first 50K. But I was happy with it because it's 72 hours. So, you know, you're not, I knew I wasn't going to set the world on fire. My expectations from the very beginning was not that I'm going to make the podium. I had no fantasies of that whatsoever. But I knew I was going to hang up a good number. I wanted to get over 200 because I wanted to prove to myself that I could do Swami Shuffle 200 in 72 hours or less. The heat kind of sank me. But then around 6 o'clock, because the sun had gone down, so the sun had set, and I was refilling my electrolyte and my scratch fuel and grabbing a couple more peanut butter packs and everything so I could head out on loops. And I wasn't really paying attention where I was going. And you know those parking lot big concrete separators? They don't feel good when you take off at a trot and your left foot is up and it comes down toe first right on the edge of the concrete. And I saw stars and I felt pain like I have not felt in a really, really long time. And I didn't look down at my foot, but I was like, okay, that's going to really hurt. Well, it did. And turns out that I ripped the toe of my shoe and there was blood down there and everything. And I was just like, you know what? There's nothing I can do about it. So I stopped at the medical tent, had them just kind of spray some antiseptic on it. They were like, do you want to bandage it? I was like, I don't even know what to bandage because I don't know what's hurt, you know, because you couldn't really tell looking at it. You just knew that something wasn't right with the toenail and I couldn't tell what. I couldn't tell if I just cracked it in half or what was going on. It felt like my toe was broken. And that became my second thing to overcome and adapt. The first thing was that I ended up with a subcompact, and I had planned on doing my sleep breaks in my SUV. I was going to fold down the seats and do my sleep breaks in the SUV. Well, they didn't have an SUV at the rental car place, so I ended up with a compact, and the seats don't fold down in a compact. So I had to adapt and push the front seat all the way back and reclined it as far as I could, and that became my sleep center. So that was my first overcome and adapt. My second thing was, okay, I have no push, because for those of you who know, your toe plays a major part in running. Who knew? But toes are semi-pretty important when you're running, and I had no push on my toes. So I was like, all right, we're looking at 15 to 20 minute per mile pace for the rest of the game, and we're just going to push to get whatever mileage we can get. And I just kept on pushing. So the first night, I took no sleep breaks, and this was on purpose. I took no sleep breaks whatsoever. I took two sit-down breaks. One probably about midnight the first night, so it was probably about 15 hours in. I took a sit-down break in the little warming area because it was getting kind of cold, and I was just wanted to situate myself, figure out how I was going to do this. Toe is just throbbing like crazy. Had formed a blister, stopped by the medical tent, popped the blisters, got my toes retaped. Actually taped my toe with a big like pad over the toe. My big toe on my left foot. Still couldn't tell if I had broken it or what I had done. So my gait was definitely changed, and but I was like, you know, somebody asked me afterwards, they said, "Well, why didn't you stop?" And I was just like, so what was I going to do? My flight out wasn't until January 4th, you know, so it wasn't like I was going to, you know, go get a flight out earlier on a holiday weekend. So, you know, it's New Year's, it's 2025. You know what? Just overcome the pain, overcome the discomfort, figure out how to move efficiently. And that's kind of what I settled my mind into doing. So the first 24 hours, so 9 a.m. on the start of what was my day two, New Year's Day, I was at about 72 miles, which I was happy with it. I mean, no, I'm not setting the world on fire. 24 hours, 72 miles, do the math. I didn't set the world on fire, but I hadn't sat down to sleep at all. I had two sit down breaks, and I kept on going. I was like, okay, I'm gonna just keep on pushing until I hit 100 miles. And so finally, in 37 hours, I finally hit 100 miles, and I grabbed my sleeping bag, and they had this, they called it the napping area. And so it was a tent, it had two heaters in it. And so it was about, I don't know, I don't even know what time it was. It was maybe 10 o'clock at night on January 1st. So my second night, second day, second night. And I just grabbed my sleeping bag and I said, okay, I'm going to lay down and get myself a good 3 hour nap. And so that's what I did. I took a 3 hour nap. I can't say that I slept much because my foot throbbed and throbbed and throbbed like crazy. I had blisters on both feet. I had so much dust in my lungs that I just kept on, every time I laid down, you know, like in a laying down position, felt like my lungs were going to come out of my chest. And it was crazy. So, you know, you would look at it and you'd say, well, why in the world do you do this? But I was just like, okay, got up at 1 a.m. I said, all right, let's just go and see how many miles we can do. I remember when I hit 150 miles, I was like, you know, that may be it, but we'll see. I'll just keep on pushing. And you know, it was funny. I got off track. I did my usual, you know, oops, made the wrong turn. So I ended up with 4 or 5 bonus miles. The miles, you know, going back and forth to my car to, you know, I did take a couple more little sleep breaks. Like I would do 30-minute sleep breaks. I'd just say, okay, you know, 5 laps, take a 30-minute sleep break. 5 laps, take a 30-minute sleep break. Five laps, take a 30-minute sleep break. And I did that throughout kind of the afternoon of the second and the third day, whenever it was hot, just to kind of get out of the heat and just not have it beaten down on me. But, you know, I just kept on moving, and I just did not have big stops. There was no, my longest sleep break was 3 hours. So I think I did the math afterwards, and I came in at like 11 and a half, 12 hours of total laying down time, and then another 2 hours of sitting time. Where I just, one time, at one point, I probably did the smartest thing I could have ever done. I was a little disappointed with myself, you know, having mucked up my toe and everything. And I really wanted to hit the 200-mile mark. And probably just, it was in during day two. And I realized, you know what, I'm not going to hit my goal mileage. So I need to figure out what I'm going to do. And I took a pause. And this may have been the most important lesson that I learned. I'm sitting in the pause and I'm doing what we always do as ultra runners. I'm doing ultra math and trying to figure things out. And I just heard that still small voice say, Mike, quiet down. And I just turned my brain off and I sat on this bench and I didn't think of anything. As I just sat there, just kind of letting my brain and everything just quiet itself, I felt like this almost like a surge of energy. And I heard the words, consistency is better than quickness. So as I sat there and tried to, think about this, once again, it was quiet yourself. I just heard the, it was just quiet yourself, Mike. And so I quieted myself and I just let that sink in. Consistency is better than quickness. And that became my mantra. For the next day and a half, I think I had like 36 hours left in the race. For the next 36 hours, it was just be consistent. You don't have to lay down giant amounts of miles. You don't have to go at a certain pace. You're not trying to do this quick. Just do this consistency. Well, when I had sat down, I was in 45th place overall and the 21st male. So there were a lot of people in front of me. And through the next 36 hours, as I just kept on telling myself, consistency is better than quickness. Consistency is better than quickness. I never really watched the board. I noticed that my watch was different than the board. I brought it up to them. They said, well, there might have been a glitch, but we're just going with what the timing thing says. And I was like, no problem. It wasn't like, I was going for a record or anything. So, I wasn't too worried about it. Then I got, so the second night was my weirdo night. There were lots of fun things. So there was, the, it's like a baseball player statue, just the little like board on like a sled, and they pushed it like next to the plate so that pitchers could have like a target of what a batter looks like to hit strike zones. So they had the different strike zones marked on this figure. And this dude was being pushed all over the course. I mean, I don't think he made it all the way around, but he was being pushed all over the course. I thought it was a teddy bear. It turned out it was a sloth, stuffed animal. And he was in a chair and he was being carried all over the course. And so the second night, this is actually kind of funny. This is that ultra story. So the second night, all of a sudden, I'm just, those of you who've run with me in that period from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. know that I go a little daffy. I mean, I'm just like maybe not all there. And so the first thing that happened is I round this corner and I see this dude with a bat about ready to attack me. And I like stop in my tracks and I'm like, holy crap. And, trying to figure out what to do. And then I actually opened my eyes and looked and saw that it was the dude, baseball player dude on the sled with his, New Year's ornaments, his New Year's tiara and all kinds of decorations on him and everything. I was like, whew, okay, good. So I went on going around the next lap. All of a sudden, there's a snake coiled at this fence. So this is like the one place where there's a lot of shadows and everything. And I see this snake coiled, and I like loop way out around the snake. Didn't know there was a girl behind me, and she comes up and she's like, what in the world was that all about? I said, you didn't see the snake? She's like, the snake? I said, yeah, coiled right against the fence. So she walks over and she picks up an orange extension cord. She said, was it orange? So yeah, I thought an orange extension cord coiled was a snake. It wasn't. So then, probably the third night, it's in that 3 a.m., and I'm just being consistent, going, okay, I got like 5 more hours, 6 more hours to go. It's probably like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. I don't know what time it was. And the sloth that I had been watching for 3 days almost now move around the course, the sloth spoke to me and he said, why are you moving, stupid? I'm sure that's what he said. Nobody else heard the sloth, but I heard the sloth. So, that was the story. But I just kept on moving. So I was just like, consistency is better than quickness. And I kept on moving, kept on moving, kept on moving, and realized that there were a couple guys that were out there with me that I could catch. And you all know that I'm a little bit competitive when it gets towards the end of the race. And I was like, you know what? I could probably catch them and pass them if I just stay consistent, because I know they're going to go down for one more sleep, because this is like probably like 4 in the morning. And the one guy, I had done a bunch of laps with him, and he was probably about four laps ahead of me. And he said, "Hey, I'm going down for an hour, like at 5 a.m. So, you know, go ahead, try and catch me." And I was like, "Huh, okay, challenge on." Then there was a guy that we had both been chasing, and evidently he must have got really tired because he went down around 3 o'clock and he didn't get back up until like 7 o'clock the next morning with 2 hours left. So we had both passed him. Well, then this dude goes down probably about 6:30, 7 o'clock. And I'm like, okay, I got like three laps now to catch up to him. I could finish in the top 10 potentially. And I was like, that would be pretty outstanding with my toe as ugly as it is right now. And so I just kept on being consistent, just chunking out miles, you know, stopping by the phenomenal aid station that Aravipa does. Oh, my goodness. If you like to eat during ultras, go do an Aravipa race. That's it. That's my advertisement. The aid station food was phenomenal. I was never hungry. I don't even know why I needed anything else. I ate almost all my peanut butter packs, but man, the food was phenomenal. So I just kept on being consistent, stopping by the aid station, getting a cup of coffee. They had everything. They even had grits, y'all. I mean, I walked in and they said, "You want a cup of grits?" And I looked at them and I was like, "Oh yeah, slather the butter on there and bless your heart." And they just looked at me. The one girl goes, "Oh, so we have a Southerner in the race." And I was like, "I love grits." So I had me some grits for breakfast and ended up tied for 10th with 170 miles officially. My Strava recorded 182, but you know, we all know GPS watches. I wouldn't go by that as your official mileage because they're never straight on. So I was happy with my race. Finished up my race. Got to my Airbnb, realized that, oh my goodness, we've done a number on the toe, don't look at it. So I dressed it up as best as I could, threw a sock back on it, and flew home the next day, and Jenny took one look at it and said, "We're going to the clinic tomorrow morning." So we went to urgent care, and they did a number on it, but it's now improving. I'm right at this point about 2 weeks out from the race, and I can start moving on it. I'm kind of restricting my miles, starting keeping it low and everything, because I do have Swami Shuffle coming up here soon. And so that's my across the years recap, as you know, weird as that sounded. It was a fantastic race. Would I do it again? Absolutely. I think I'd love to go out there and tackle the 6 days in the desert across the years. I think it would be a phenomenal, phenomenal race to do. There are a couple things that I definitely would do differently. But yeah, it was a great race. I had a fantastic time. So let's just go real quick. What's coming up in 2025 for the podcast? Well, we've got Swami Shuffle kicking off February 23rd, and we're trying to raise as much money as possible. For those of you who don't know, Swami Shuffle is a fundraiser for veteran suicide awareness. We still have 22 veterans a day on average committing suicide. For those of you who don't read the news, New Year's Eve, we had a huge suicide that was all over the news because people thought it was a terrorist attack. It turns out it was a veteran who committed suicide in a very, very dramatic fashion to make a statement. His statement wasn't about veteran suicide. It was, you know, something political, but the statement should be, why aren't our veterans getting the care and the attention they need so that they don't feel that suicide is their best option? So awareness and action, that is the word awareness, the letter N, and awareness and action. Awareness and action is doing phenomenal stuff. They still give money to Mission 22, which provides counseling to veterans and their families, which is very, very important to remember the families, because every time that somebody commits suicide, there's a family that's left devastated. So we got to remember this, and this is why I do Swami Shuffle. I don't do it because I have this deep, deep desire to torch myself on the beach and throughout the Outer Banks of North Carolina. I do this because if we can bring awareness to the fact that we have to do something different for our veterans in the United States, then it's all worth it. So following up on that, we're going to have James Huller on a podcast. He's the race director. We're going to get a couple of the other Swami Shufflers that are brand new to kind of tell us why they're shuffling this year. And folks, there's going to be a QR code that we're going to put in every single podcast. And I would love for you guys to click on the QR code to donate. You don't have to do it in anybody's particular name. Do it in the name of a veteran who, you know, has your heart. The more we can do to create awareness for veteran suicide prevention, the better we are as a nation. And then going on in the podcast, I've started working out with F3. It is a group of guys that get together. The three F's are fitness, fellowship, and faith. And the fantastic group of guys. And so we're going to do an F3 podcast month where we're going to feature some of these guys that are really helping me be more aware of my fitness and my fitness levels. And then, of course, we're going to feature runners and other people that are out doing amazing things, because living an ultra life is not just about ultra runners. Living an ultra life is about people who dare to do something that they don't think that they could do before. Anybody who is daring to do something that just scares the snot out of them, that's who living an ultra life is for. If you ask me, why do we do this podcast? It's because we want the voices that are out there and they're willing to go out and dare to do something big. We want you all to hear their stories, to be inspired by them, because you're no different. If you're sitting down right now and you're not in any kind of shape, you know what? You can live an ultra life also. Just believe that life is worth living. It's worth living to the full. And come on out there and live with us. That's going to do it for this episode of Living an Ultra Life. Really, really do appreciate you guys. And I can't thank you enough for listening to this podcast.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultra Life.